So 1985, I went to go see Back to the Future, and I really liked the film. So I called you up and said, we got to go see this film together. Because it's about a kid who goes back in time and accidentally prevents his parents from meeting, and then he has to try to get them to meet again. So you and I go see it. I come down to Orange County, you and I go see it. And then we go out afterwards for pie or something. And I just wanted to talk to you about the film. Sort of, it's kind of like this, to kind of get you to, tell me some stories from your life. And he said, well, there actually was an incident, when, I'm trying to lead you up to you. Do you remember the story that you told me? It involved, Patricia coming over to your parents' house and you showing off your dad's gun.
But that was before we were married.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Do you want to tell that
Well,
story?
I mean, nothing happened except she was sitting down on the couch, and I pointed the gun in her general direction, and it went off, and the bullet buried itself into the couch.
Yeah.
And Edith and the old man never found it. But that was all.
Yeah.
There was nothing further to it than that.
It's a pretty important piece of history. I mean,
Obviously, it could have.
if you had had better aim.
I wasn't aiming at it. And it was a foolish thing to do.
You were 17
but
years old
the
and
gun had a hair trigger.
Which you didn't know?
No.
Or, yeah.
The old man liked to have a hair trigger gun next to him. Well, in this case, it was up in the bureau.
Right.
A lot of times he kept it on the dresser. Not a dresser, a side table.
Yeah.
With this hair trigger.
Yeah.
And I often thought, geez, what if I went upstairs to ask him a question or something? And he's got this thing with a hair trigger. So I never went upstairs.
Except to show off the gun to a girl. Well, the story impressed me. But anyway, so now we're late 80s, 88, 89.
I think we're into the, almost into the 90s.
Yeah.
All right, so.
So you're settling down the robot business.
Yeah, it's dying.
You've got the two publications.
They were dying too. There was nobody making any money, any money worth anything.
So, I mean, ads, you weren't getting enough ads in the magazines. Subscription rates were going down. I mean, subscriptions were going down.
On my magazine?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
No, they were going up.
Oh, the magazine was doing okay. Okay.
Yeah. And so did the Automotive Tradesman.
Right.
Because I would get lists of shops, have them compared to my existing list. There were shops that were listed. I added them.
Okay.
Okay.
So the robot business was going down, but your magazine business was doing okay.
It was doing fine.
Okay.
So between the two of them, I was back making not huge money the way I did with the robots.
Right.
But enough money to get by on.
Right. And I imagine the robot, I mean, you're making good money, but they also had really high overhead because they had that shop. And you were building them and maintaining them.
And that's also where my magazine business was operated out of.
Right, right.
So about this time, Mary Lynn decided I'm going to go home.
She was tired of Southern California.
So, and I had about this time, I also had the office in Scottsdale. So it didn't matter to me. I had to go over there every so often.
Right.
And because they had to supervise what was going on. I couldn't leave them too long without supervision because bad things can happen when you, even good employees, bad things can happen.
Sure.
So I said, no problem. You know, I'll just come over and check into my office over there and then live with you for a few days. And then head back.
Yeah, so you were splitting time between.
I was splitting time between the two of them. And we did that for 4 years.
Was it that long?
It was that long.
Yeah.
And then I got tired of that.
Yeah.
So I decided, well, I'm going to move over there. So I got ready to shut down the Newport office. And I told the employees I had, I said, if you guys want a job, I've got one for you in Newport, in Scottsdale. Because they were still putting out the magazine, and two people I had in Scottsdale were putting out the newspaper. So I could have used them. They all chose not to leave California. So I moved everything over and hired at least one more person. So among the three of them, they were able to put out both publications. All right. Now that's got to be
94, 95?
Somewhere in that general area. Now I'm trying to think. Well, I just put it out for a number of years and had the one office in Scottsdale, and then we bought this house.
Right, so you bought this house in 2000, right?
We moved in 2000.
So where were you living before?
Oh, an apartment.
Okay.
She was still working for Fairfield.
Oh, okay. So this is
still...
This was a company-provided apartment?
Yes.
Okay.
To the managers. So we lived rent-free on it. And I was busy with the magazine and the newspaper. And she was busy working full-time and whatever else. Well, her family was here, so she was in Seventh Heaven. Her two brothers, two sons... And her mother were all here, so she spent a lot of time with them, which was fine because I was working pretty hard to make my business succeed. Then about, 2005, I decided to retire. Not that I loved what I was doing, I enjoyed it, but... I just decided it was time to retire.
Yeah.
I'd been working 50 years, Michael.
More than that, did.
Well, yeah. 70, 70, almost 60 years. And it was just time to retire and live the life of a leisurely retired gentleman. Well, as you know, that didn't happen. But I did sell the business and just walked away from it then. And I don't know if it's even around anymore.
Oh, really?
Well, I don't know. I haven't bothered to check.
Yeah.
So it might be, might have changed names. All sorts of things could have happened. So we had moved in here, 2000. This was 2005.
Yeah, but here, your place in Peoria.
And the first, that was in August of 2005 when I... sold the business and got out of town. And the first thing we did, which was planned, went on that Mediterranean cruise where we flew into London, then Barcelona, and then caught the ship out of Barcelona. We were there a couple of days. And you care to know all the countries we hit?
I challenge you to listen by memory.
All right, what is your memory? What is your memory?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay. Well, southern France was the first stop. Monaco was the second stop. Genoa and Pisa were the third. We went to, we didn't go to the Leaning Tower. Shannon and I had gone to the Leaning Tower. What we did is we went to a vineyard. And on the way there and on the way back, we could see the Leaning Tower. It wasn't that far away, maybe a mile and a half. So she was satisfied with just seeing the Leaning Tower. Besides, everybody in the bus was drunk by this time.
Right.
Because we drank so much wine and cheeses and other good stuff.
Do you know the story? In the mid-80s, the Pope came to the U.S. and he was coming to California. One of the California, old California missions. Might have been Santa Cruz. And so a bunch of Shannon's friends were planning an excursion to go out and see him. And they asked her if she'd be interested. And she said, nah, I've already met him.
That would be Shannon.
Yes.
All right, so.
So pizza.
Pizza, Genoa. Florence, we didn't stop in Florence. We just kind of drove through it and then on to Rome. We stayed about 4 days in Rome and saw a lot. You know, we went into the Colosseum, the Forum, Hadrian's Column I told you about.
Right.
A whole bunch of things, ancient. And, oh, yes, there was this priest who was a friend of Marilyn's family who was in Rome at that time.
Right, Finian McGonagall?
Something like that. Finian was his first name.
Yeah.
Anyway, he met us. If you ever go to Rome and the Vatican, you'll see this big, tall obelisk out front. And it's got Egyptian writing on it. So that's where we met him. And he was our guide through the Vatican and was a terrific guide because he knew everything that was in there.
Mm-hmm.
So he would explain who this was, who that was. Remember the fat pope who did Vatican II?
Slightly before my time.
Oh, okay. He was there. He's under glass.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of, I think he's preserved like Lenin is in Russia.
Okay.
Because, you know, he's very visible. And I don't know if they do it with gas or what, but he really looked like he was had just gone to sleep.
Oof.
So then did the whole thing all the way down to the end. It's about 900 feet long, 3 football fields.
Oof.
This is one huge church.
Mm-hmm.
Then we worked our way back the other way. And we were there a couple of hours. And so then we stepped outside into sunlight. And it was early afternoon, 12:30, 1 o'clock. So we said, Father, we'd like to buy you lunch. Okay. So we had lunch, sat and talked and joked and just fine. And finally we said, well, what are your plans the rest of the day? He says, I belong to you. So he was our guide through Rome.
Nice.
And he knew Rome like the back of his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an excellent guide. First of all, he spoke fluent Italian. And if I'd ask him a question and he didn't know the answer, he'd just stop somebody on the street and speak to them. And we went all over, not the old part of town, because Shannon and I had seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary Lynn wasn't interested in ancient history. So we stuck pretty much to the newer part. Went to the Hard Rock Cafe.
Was this a regular hangout of Father Finian?
No, we didn't. He didn't indicate that it was, but he knew where it was.
Okay.
And a bunch of other places. Did some shopping in stores. And then it was getting time to go back to the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Which means we had to catch a cab. There was no other way back in time. So we went with him to a little place right outside the Vatican where, well, actually we all left the cab because it was strictly a local one, and he showed us where to catch another cab. And he said, it's going to be expensive. And it was a little more than I wanted to pay, but we had no choice.
Yeah.
So we took the cab back to the ship, boarded the ship, and kept on going south around the toe of Italy,
mm-hmm.
and then around the heel, and then up the Adriatic to Venice. And we stayed 2 days in Venice, so we stayed one night aboard the ship.
Mm-hmm.
But we got there late afternoon. And so most things were either getting ready to close or were closed. So one of the crew members had a birthday. That was his birthday. So we found this restaurant, and I didn't listen to what the captain said. He said, we'll wait for you here, and do you mind if we start without you? Fine.
Okay.
He didn't mean start without us. He meant I pay for the drinks that they're going to have.
Oh, so something got lost there in the
translation. That was in the book.
Yeah.
That was in the book.
Yeah.
And these guys decided they liked the expensive liqueurs. Ooh, did that cost a chunk of money.
Mm.
But, you know, they'd been really good to us aboard the ship.
Yeah.
And one of them was our cabin boy, and another one was a girl he knew. And then who the others were, I don't remember, but they'd all treat us very nicely. So, didn't say a word, paid the bill, and then stayed overnight on the ship. And then next day, we chose to go alone.
Yeah.
And we explored Venice forward and backward and upside down and cut it off, please. Cut